Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 249.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. All right, welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 249. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for listening. In this particular episode, Sterling Koza, one of our amazing Jazz Piano School educators, currently getting his master's in Manhattan School of Music, and a phenomenal pianist, absolutely brilliant. Go check out his gig, say hi to him in New York City, Manhattan, if any of you are listening from there. He's going to be doing a podcast on five different strategies, methods, hacks to achieving melodic mastery, And so, you know, melodies are extremely important in music. Things can get really smorgasborged, jumbled up, right? I made up a word. But if you don't have real intention for your melodies, and that goes for playing tunes and in your solos, your expression and the intent of everything you're doing is really going to fall by the wayside, right? And we really want to grasp the beauty and the power of melodies, because that's what creates everything memorable, right? Solos, improv, everything that you play. If you can make it sound beautiful in a melodic fashion, your playing is going to be that much better. So that's going to be done by Sterling in this particular episode. I was just in Fresno at the California Association for Music Educators, and I was actually playing for the All-State Vocal Jazz Group, which is a selection of students that audition for this group and then get to perform. And so it's all California educators, jazz, classical. I had a lot of my educational friends from California there. From all over, different places and things like that. So it was really, really fun. We got to perform in this main, the main theater in Fresno, Soroyan Theater. And I heard someone mention that it was Frank Sinatra's favorite theater, actually, to perform at. I think they said in all of California, or like, at like ever. I don't know. I don't really remember, but it was one of his favorites. And it is gorgeous. It's huge. It's a huge theater, and it was packed. It was packed full of students. It was packed full of all California educators, jazz, classical, everything, band directors, college, like so many educators, so much fun. And it was just a really, really great time. The thing about it that I wanted to talk to you about was that we had five rehearsals starting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday night was our concert. And there wasn't really much time to go over a lot of things. Now, I was the accompanist, so I wasn't, you know, forefront. I did have some solos. I was part of the rhythm section, but I was also accompanying the vocalist without the drums and bass for a lot of the time, a lot of the rehearsals. One of the major things that really came to mind that I wanted to do a podcast on, I'll do a little bit later because I want to finish up the series on improv. I need to go over dominant seventh chords and major seventh chords. But I want to do a podcast on efficient practice and how to efficiently practice to make progress, because I get this all the time. Like, Brendan, I've been working at this for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, and everyone starts to say, I quote, I just can't get it. It's just not coming together for me, right? And most of the times, it's not because a lot of you don't have the information, especially if you're a Jazz Piano School member. I mean, there's so much information inside Jazz Piano School, and it's so organized and well laid out. You have all the materials, you have the practice education, but again, a lot of it can get pretty monotonous, and it's hard to understand that almost everything that I give you or everything you practice is really needed. And how do you progress at certain individual concepts so that you get better at them in a quick manner, right? Learning how to play solo piano or chords or improvisation, it really shouldn't take 1 to 2 years. I mean, now a lot of you are probably like, what? You gotta be kidding me. Like, most of the time, I would say the number one, I don't wanna say failure, but roadblock, thing that's holding students back, probably you listening right now, is due to either lack of practice time and consistency, meaning you practice once every 2 to 3 weeks, right? So obviously that's not going to get you anywhere. The second thing is, I see this all the time, is that students will be practicing every day, but their practicing is not efficient. They're not practicing in a way that's actually making them better. It's probably hurting them, because if you practice mistakes, guess what? It takes about 3 to 4 times to undo all those learned mistakes. It takes 3 to 4 perfect times, I'd probably argue even more, to undo all the mistakes that you've learned, right? All the habits that you've learned. So it's harder to undo things and then just practice them right the first time. But so many students aren't practicing correctly, or they're practicing mistakes, which doesn't lead to any progress. So even though you could feel like, oh, like I practiced 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour each day for the past 2 weeks, but I'm not getting better. I don't understand why. It's probably the education. It's probably not. It's probably due to the way that you are practicing, or your approach, or the methodology that you're using to practice. Anyway, I got really involved in this conversation while I was in Fresno, around a lot of my peers, my educators, my colleagues, and things like that, talking about jazz, talking about systematic jazz practice and getting better, especially for students, high schools, colleges, even professionals, like at my level. How do I practice to get better? I have all these huge charts that I'm practicing for right now, Life of Riley, a Jim McNeely big band chart, and a chart, Allegressi, which is a Maria Schneider tune, beautiful, gorgeous tune, but there, you know, I don't have much time to get this under my fingers, and the performance is coming up very fast. And so I really need to be efficient at learning the music so that I'm not wasting any time in getting better and being able to perform this. And as a professional working jazz pianist that is doing all sorts of things, like playing in Fresno, traveling, playing gigs, concerts, teaching, running an online jazz piano education business, right? I need to be as efficient as possible at absolutely everything I do, right? So that I'm getting better, I'm making progress, and I'm learning my music to the full extent so that I'm performing it optimally at 100%, right? In a professional way without mistakes. That sounds great. So I clearly am inspired to talk about this concept more. And again, I think it's really, really important for students. I'll get more into that later in the future podcast after I get through my improv. For now, let's check out what Sterling has to teach you guys, because it's absolutely wonderful, on melodic mastery. Here we go.
Hey everybody, it's Sterling here with another podcast. Today we're talking about learning the melodies of jazz standards. Learning tunes is something that we've talked about previously in this podcast series, but this time we're talking specifically about how to really master a melody on any given tune. This is important for a number of reasons. One, because we often focus as piano players on learning the chord changes of a song, and don't always give as much attention to the melody, mainly because we usually defer to the melody instruments. You know, something like, you know, accompanying a vocalist or playing in a group with horns like trumpet or saxophone or even trombone. And usually they've got it covered, but what happens when they're all gone and it's just you? You're playing in a trio, you're playing solo. You got to know that melody. And sometimes, I know I've been caught by surprise several times of melodies that I thought I knew, but really didn't have under my hands. Another good reason to really focus on the melody of the tune is it can give you ideas of how to shape the tune, in terms of its character, and also, you know, if a tune has certain trademarks that you can pay more close detail to. So, today we're going to start by looking at How Deep Is the Ocean, written by Irving Berlin. And I'm going to show you five steps that you can use to really master the melody of this tune. The first would be just to check out the original source, whether that's a lead sheet or something like the original folio version of a tune. So a lot of jazz standards have sheet music that you can find either online or in collections of songbooks of folio arrangements. And that will tell you the original chords, the original key, and the original voicings which are used to play this tune as it was written by the composer. And this can be really valuable, especially because a lot of lead sheets might have some errors in the chords or in the melody. So never take a lead sheet at its word. You always want to cross-check it with either a good version of the song, or even if you have it, the original folio. So let's take a look at How Deep Is the Ocean, and we're just going to read the melody to start out. So I'm going to pull out my lead sheet, and let's just take a look at this as it was originally written here. So we're in the key of C minor, and it starts on the minor third. So that's the first half, and then it repeats, and so on and so forth. If we looked at the form of this tune, we would know that it's an ABAC, meaning that the first eight bars is the main theme, and a second eight bars is a new theme, and then the first eight bars returns, the second A, which leads us into the C section, which sounds like this. A nice conclusion. It actually resolves in the key of E flat major. Which leads us back to the top in C minor. So already we found out two things about this melody. One, it begins in the key of C minor on the minor third, which is E flat. And two, that it actually ends on an E flat just where it began, except we're in a new key, we're in the key of E flat major. So just looking at the melody of this tune has already given us some information. So the lead sheet is a great place to start just to get to know the melody. But obviously, you know, we need to know more about the chords and about the, more importantly, the meaning of the tune. So step two would be to check out some different versions of this tune. I would recommend some instrumental versions by Bill Evans and Chet Baker. But the best thing you can do, especially when learning standards, is listen to vocal versions. A couple on this tune which I'd recommend would be Billie Holiday's version. She actually sings it in the key of F minor as opposed to C minor, which is the original key. And Frank Sinatra sings this one in the key of A minor. So checking out vocal versions can be a fun way to experiment with playing the tune in different keys, which also might lead you to some new discoveries. Thirdly, Diana Krall has an interesting version of this tune. So those are three vocal versions which would give you some ideas of maybe some intros or arrangements. And of course, you know, checking out your favorite artist's version of this tune to see like what style you want to bring to it is a great thing to do. The next thing you want to do is look at the lyrics. So if we looked at the lyrics of this tune, of course they correspond with the melody, and they can tell us, you know, the meaning behind the piece. So this tune starts out with the lyric, "How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How deep is the sky?" And then it says, "How many times a day do I think of you? How many roses are sprinkled with dew?" So this is really a love song. It says, "How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How deep is the sky?" And if we keep going on, "How far would I travel to be where you are? How far is the journey from here to a star? And if I ever lost you, how much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? How deep is the sky?" So this is a very sentimental tune. And you might want to incorporate that into your version as you would play it. But obviously, checking out the lyrics can tell you, you know, how to interpret the tune. But another thing that that I discovered recently was that it really can tell you how to phrase the tune. So if we go back to just the melody, let's do the second half. And just playing single notes is a great way to practice this, so that you can focus just on the melody. "How far would I travel to be where you are? How far is the journey from here to a star? And if I ever lost you, how much would I cry? How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky?" So the lyrics really lay it out pretty clearly. That's how this tune is supposed to be played. When we play instrumental music without the aid of a vocalist, we run the risk of kind of interpolating the melody or interpreting it in a different way than it was originally conceived, which is when it starts to be a little less convincing. I think it was Ben Webster that said he never plays a tune without thinking of the melody. If he forgets the melody, he stops playing, which might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but I think it still rings true. So after you learn the lyrics of a tune, you want to be able to play it solo. So this would be the fourth step. You want to play it with the melody and chords to really bring it all together. So here's how I would play this tune, and you know, see if you can hear the lyrics in what I'm playing, just to give it some clarity. So after going through the lyrics and the melody of this tune with a kind of a fine-tooth comb, I feel a lot more confident playing it solo because I really know the melody. And the last step that we want to do is think about if you were playing in a trio setting, you'd be using a different set of chords and techniques in jazz piano. So this is when I would pull out my play-along and maybe use some more rootless voicings in my left hand. So here's how I'd play this tune, one chorus with a trio.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that was a little demo of How Deep is the Ocean with Trio. And we did a solo version, so we've really covered all the bases. We started with the lead sheet, number one. Number two, we checked out some different versions, instrumental and vocal. Number three, we looked at the lyrics. Number four, we played it solo piano with melody, bass, and chords. And then lastly, we put it all together in a typical jazz trio setting. So I hope this gives you some ideas of ways that you can really master the melody of a tune. And once you have the melody down, then you can go on to improvise over it and you'll be all set. And that's when the fun really begins. So I hope you found this useful. Happy practicing.